chapter 8 and verse 1. It says, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after the one that appeared to me the first time. And the first time was in the previous chapter, in chapter 7, where it says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions. So this was the third year of the reign of Belshazzar. And if I remember right, he was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. And if you remember, he was the one who was having the big party the night that the handwriting was on the wall. And that was the end of him and the kingdom. And the Medo-Persian Empire began as they took over Babylon. So this is just before that happened. He says, I saw in the vision, and it so happened while I was looking that I was in Shushan in the citadel, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in the vision that I was by the river Ulai. Then I lifted my eyes and saw, and there standing beside the river was a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but the one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. So what is he seeing? What is this? Well, we don't have to guess because he tells us in verse 20. He says, the ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. So he's getting this vision just a short time before it actually happened, before Media and Persia came in and took over Babylon. So he actually got to live through one of his visions. You know, he finally got to have a dream and a vision and actually see it happen when the Medes and Persians actually came in and took over Babylon. Because if you think back to all the way back to the beginning, all the dreams and the visions and everything that Daniel had, and it was kind of like, you know, well, you know, I see these things, but they're all way off in the future somewhere, and here's one that he actually got to see happen while he was alive. It says, I saw the ram pushing westward, southward, northward, that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver him from his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. So, again, this is the Medo-Persian Empire that came in as Belshazzar had his feast and died. And I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. So we don't have to guess what this is because he tells us in verse 21. And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece, and the large horn that's between its eyes is the first king, which was Alexander the Great. So in verse 6, he says, then he came to the ram that had the two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram, and he was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. Therefore, the male goat grew very great, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken, and in his place four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven. And we don't have to guess what that is. He tells us in verse 22. As for the broken horn, the four that came up stood in his place. Four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not in its power. So, and we know from history, we can look back at history and compare with what the Bible said was going to happen that did happen. And Antiochus, of course, or brother Alexander the Great, when he reached, you know, his height, he conquered the world, he died. And the kingdom was divided between his four generals. So that's the four horns. And that's the interesting thing, is every time you see a horn in prophecy, it represents a king. You know, the kingdom or the king that represents the kingdom. So you see two horns, Media and Persia. two different kings. One's a Mede-Persian and one's a Persian. You know, and then you see the goat with the one horn, Alexander the Great. Then you see four horns, the four generals which took over the different kingdoms, the kingdom of the north, south, east, and west. Okay, so those are just things that we see from history. Out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. So if he grew toward the south, the east, and the west, where was he from? He was from the north, the king of the north. This king of the north that we're going to be reading about is Antiochus Epiphanes from history. And it grew up toward the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the hosts and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. Now this is where Antiochus Epiphanes is a type of the end time king of the north, which is the beast of Revelation, chapter 13. And the power behind him, as it says, was Satan. And he is the one who drew the stars of heaven, one third of the angels, and threw them to the earth. And just to reference that, we'll go back to Revelation chapter 12 and verse 4, where it says, his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. So, we know who did that. And it says, he even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. And by him the daily sacrifices were taken away and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. So, to try to understand what the beast will do in the future, all we have to do is look at the type from history, which is Antiochus Epiphanes. He's going to do what? He's going to exalt himself. And if we go over to chapter 11, we'll see where he... the biggest part of chapter 11 is about Antiochus Epiphanes. It has to do with the king of the north versus the king of the south. But we read in verse 36, it says, then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath or the indignation has been accomplished. For what has been determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall exalt himself above them all. So, he's going to do what? He's going to exalt himself above everything that's considered God. And by him the daily sacrifices will be taken away, and the place of the sanctuary shall be cast down. So, again, we're going to see in history where he did just that, Antiochus Epiphanes. Verse 12, because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. Because of transgression, the word transgression there means rebellion or revolt. And again, we go over to chapter 11. In Daniel chapter 11 and verse 30, it says, for ships from Cyprus shall come against him. Therefore, he shall be grieved and return in rage against the holy covenant and do damage. And he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the holy covenant. So he was looking for traitors to help him. And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress, and they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. And those of the people who understand shall instruct many. Yet for many days they shall fall by sword, by flame, by captivity, and plundering. Now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. And some of those of understanding shall fall, to refine them, purify them, make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. And that, which we will read a little bit about, is the Maccabean Revolt in history, which occurred sometime around 160, 165 AD, or BC. So, back to Daniel 8 and verse 13. It says, "Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking, 'How long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot?'" So he hears two angels talking. And the one asks the question to the other one, how long will it be? The daily sacrifice taken away and the rebellion, the sanctuary being trampled. How long will it be? And he said to me, "For 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed." 2,300 days. We're going to come back to this because that's not what it means. Verse 15. "Then it happened, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood by me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai, who called and said, 'Gabriel, make this man understand the vision.'" So we know who this angel is. It's Gabriel. "So he came near where I stood. And when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, 'Understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end.'" Ah, what end? The end of what time? "Now, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep and with my face to the ground. But he touched me and stood me upright and said, 'Look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time or the last end,'" because that's what you look up the word in the Hebrew, and that's what it says, the last end. "The latter time of the indignation, or the latter time of the wrath, for at the appointed time the end shall be." So the last end, like I said, that's the same word in each case where it says latter time, latter end. It's the end of the indignation. The end of that particular wrath, that particular war that's going on. And that's the one from chapter 11 and verse 36, where he says the same thing. "Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods. He shall prosper till the wrath or the indignation has been accomplished. For what has been determined shall be done." So again, back in chapter 8, verse 20, he says, "The ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. The male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large eye that's between his eyes is the first king, which was Alexander the Great. As for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall rise having fierce features who shall understand sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully, shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. He shall even exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means." So again, as a type of the end time beast, it is the beast, the end time beast, who will fight against Christ that is coming. And of course, we can read that again just to make sure you know where the references are. We can read that in Revelation 17. Revelation 17 and verse 11, it says, "The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth, and is of the seven, and is going to perdition. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and will give their power and authority to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings." And then in 19:19, it says, "And I saw the beast, the kings of the earth, and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army." So the end time beast is the one who will fight against the prince of princes, which is Christ. So what I want to do start with, this is my 1611 edition, the original King James. It's 400 years old last year, by the way, in case you missed that. This particular, the original, still has some of the Apocrypha in there. Your King James, I'm sure, doesn't have the Apocrypha. They took those books out over the years. And one of the reasons they did that is because none of the books were mentioned by Christ or by none of the New Testament writers. If you know, when you're reading through the New Testament, they're quoting Daniel and Isaiah and Joel and Deuteronomy, you know, the Psalms. They mention all these books, but none of these books were mentioned by any of them. And then when you read them, there's, I call them discrepancies, that you don't find in Scripture, which is one of the reasons why they took them out and don't regard them as Scripture, though they do regard them as historical books, as historical documents. So I'm just going to read a couple of things here from history. This is the Maccabeans who wrote these things as it happened, as far as we know. In chapter 1, in verse 20, it says, "And after that Antiochus had smitten Egypt, which was the king of the north, smitten the king of the south, he returned again in the 143rd year and went up against Israel and Jerusalem with a great multitude. And entered proudly into the sanctuary, and took away the golden altar, the candlesticks of light, and all the vessels thereof, and the table of the showbread, the pouring vessels and the vials, the censers of gold, and the veil, and the crowns, the golden ornaments that were before the temple, all which he pulled off. He took also the silver and the gold and all the precious vessels. He took the hidden treasures which he found. And when he had taken them all away, he went to his own land, having made a great massacre and spoken very proudly. Therefore there was a great mourning in Israel in every place where they were, so that the princes and the elders mourned." That's the 143rd year. And then in verse 54 it says, "Now the 15th day of the month Casleu, in the 145th year, they set up the abomination of desolation upon the altar, and burned idols, or builded idols, altars, throughout the cities of Judah on every side, and burnt incense at the doors of their houses and in the streets. And when they had rent in pieces the books of the law which they found, they burnt them with fire." And that's the reference to, he cast truth to the ground. When they found, the only truth, of course, is the Word of God. And wherever they found the Word of God, they tore it to pieces and burned it. They were trying to do away with the law and with the truth of God and substitute their gods, their idols, and forcing the people to sacrifice to their idols. And wherever was found any, the books of the Testament, or if any consented to the law, the king's commandment was that they should be put to death. And thus they did by their authority unto the Israelites every month to as many as were found in the cities. Now the 5th and 20th day of the month they did sacrifice upon the idol altar, which was upon the altar of God, at which time, according to the commandment, they put to death certain women that had caused their children to be circumcised, and they hanged the infants about the necks, and rifled their houses, and slew them that had circumcised them. So they went on and did what they say, and there was a very great wrath upon Israel. And then in chapter 4, read a little bit of chapter 4 here in verse 38. And when they, this is when during the war, and they had just about beaten Antiochus Epiphanes, and they came back to Jerusalem. When they saw the sanctuary desolate, and the altar profaned, and the gates burned up, and shrubs growing in the courts as in a forest, or in one of the mountains, yea, and the priest's chambers pulled down, they rent their clothes, they made great lamentation, and cast ashes upon their heads, and fell down flat to the ground upon their faces, and blew an alarm with the trumpets, and cried towards heaven. Then Judas appointed certain men to fight against those that were in the fortresses until he had cleansed the sanctuary. So he chose priests of blameless conversation, as such that had pleasure in the law, who cleansed the sanctuary and bare out the defiled stones into an unclean place. And then they went about rebuilding the altar and getting in the new vessels, the new lamps, candlesticks, showbread, all the new things that they needed. And on 52 it says, now on the 5th and 20th day of the 9th month, which is called Kislev, in the 148th year, they rose up in the morning, and they offered sacrifices according to the law upon the new altar of burnt offerings which they had made. Look at what time and what day the heathen hath profaned it. Even in that was it dedicated with songs and harps and cymbals. Then all the people fell upon their faces, worshiping and praising the God of heaven who had given them good success. And so they kept the dedication of the altar 8 days and offered burnt offerings with gladness and sacrifice, a sacrifice of deliverance and praise. So we have the one instance where they came in the 143rd year, and then he left after taking the table of showbread and the candlesticks and all the vessels of the temple. And then he came back in the 145th year, it says, and they set up the abomination of desolation and sacrificed the swine's blood upon the altar. But the one says it was the 15th day, and the other one says it was the 25th day. So there's a discrepancy. And then in chapter 10 of 2 Maccabees, he says, now Maccabeus and his company, the Lord giving them, guiding them, recovered the temple and the city, but the altars which the heathen had built in the open street, and also the chapels, they pulled down. And having cleansed the temple, they made another altar, and striking stones, they took fire out of them, and offered a sacrifice after 2 years, and set forth incense and lights and showbread. When that was done, they fell flat down and besought the Lord that they might come no more into such troubles. But if they sinned any more against him, that he himself would chasten them with mercy, for that they might not be delivered into the blasphemous and barbarous nations. Now upon the same day that the strangers profaned the temple, on the very same day it was cleansed again, even the 5th and 20th day of the same month, which is Kislev. So again, he says it's the same time, but then he says after 2 years instead of after 3 years. So you see where the discrepancies come in, and you try and figure out how all that comes together. And this is Josephus. A lot of people have a copy of Josephus. It was published by different companies, so my page might be a different page in a different different book, but this is from page 257. It says, King Antiochus, returning out of Egypt, for fear of the Romans, So see, it was the latter time of the kingdom, because Rome was already on the rise, and Antiochus Epiphanes was running for fear of the Romans. So he was already doing things out of fear, because Rome was coming up. He made an expedition against the city Jerusalem, and when he was there in the 143rd year of the kingdom of the Seleucidae, he took the city without fighting, those of his own party opening the gates to him. And when he had gotten possession of Jerusalem and slew many of the opposite party, and when they had plundered it of a great deal of money, he returned to Antioch. Now it came to pass after 2 years, in the 145th year, on the 25th day of the month, which is called Casleu, by the Macedonians, Apelles, that the king came up to Jerusalem, and pretending peace, he got possession of the city by treachery, at which time he spared not so much as those that admitted him unto it on account of the riches that lay in the temple. And he left the temple bare and took away the golden candlesticks, the golden altar of incense, the table of showbread, the altar of burnt offerings, did not even abstain from the veils which were made of the linen and the scarlet. He emptied the secret treasures. But we just read in 1 Maccabees that happened in the 143rd year. And Josephus is saying it happened in the 145th year. So you see the discrepancies, why they don't regard it as scripture. Because there's discrepancies as to when it happened. Well, they do agree on what happened, but not when it happened. He goes on to say that they pillaged the whole city, and when the king had built an idol altar upon God's altar, he slew swine upon it, and so offered a sacrifice, neither according to the law nor according to the Jewish religious worship in that country. He also compelled them to forsake the worship which they paid to their own God, and to adore those whom he took to be gods, and made them build temples and raise idol altars in every city and village, and offer swine upon them every day. So that was Antiochus Epiphanes doing that. And then in he says again what we had read in Maccabees, how they generals of Antiochus' armies were beaten so often that Judas assembled the people together and told them they would go back to Jerusalem and purify the temple. But as soon as they saw it, they found the temple deserted and the gates burned down, the plants growing in the temple of their own accord on account of its desertion. And so they went about to purify the temple. And they got the new vessels of candlesticks and the show of bread and the incense and the veils and the gates and all this. It says, now it fell out that these things were done on the very same day which the divine worship had fallen off, and it was reduced to a profane and common use after 3 years' time. For so it was that the temple was made desolate by Antiochus, and so continued for 3 years. This desolation happened to the temple in the 145th year, on the 25th day of the month, but it was dedicated anew on the same day, the 25th day of the month, in the 148th year. And this desolation came to pass according to the prophecy of Daniel, which was given 408 years before. For he declared that the Macedonians would dissolve that worship for some time. And one more paragraph, page 429, that was Antiquities, and you go to the wars. This is at that same time that Antiochus, who was called Epiphanes, had a quarrel with the sixth Ptolemy about his right to the whole country of Syria. A great sedition fell among the men of power in Judea, and when they had contention about obtaining the government, while each of those that were of dignity could not endure to be subject to their own equals. However, Onias, one of the high priests, got the better and cast the sons of Tobias out of the city, who fled to Antiochus and besought him to make use of them for his leaders and to make an expedition into Judea. Now, of course, this is all the things that you read about in chapter 11. The king, being thereunto disposed beforehand, complied with them and came upon the Jews with a great army and took their city by force and slew a great multitude of those that favored Ptolemy and sent out his soldiers to plunder them without mercy. He also spoiled the temple and put a stop to the constant practice of offering a daily sacrifice for 3 years and 6 months. So, questions? You can see the discrepancies. Was it in the 143rd year when the things were taken out of the temple? Or was it in the 145th year? Was it on the 15th day of the month or the 25th day of the month? Was it 2 years? Was it 3 years? Or was it 3.5 years? Those are all the things that we just read. So it's a little confusing to try and figure out the historical situation of what happened. So let's go back to Daniel chapter 8 and put together with everything that we just read. It says, he even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. And by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. So the daily sacrifice was taken away, the sanctuary was overthrown. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth to the ground. He did all this and prospered. So because of the rebellion, Antiochus dispatched an army to the sanctuary to oppose the sacrifices, and then they went so far as what we just read to cast truth to the ground. They found any of the scriptures, any of the covenant, the Old Testament, the scriptures, they tore them in pieces, threw them in the street, and burned them. So that was casting truth to the ground. So these are things that happened in history. Then in verse 13, he says, how long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot? And he said, how long is it going to last? Trampling the sanctuary and the sacrifices not being offered. How long is this going to be? And he said, for 2,300 days. 2,300 days. But that's not what the angel said. That's the way they translated it. Because when you look up the word to see, it doesn't say that. Verse 26, it says, and the vision of the evenings and mornings which was told is true. So, if you look that up, it's a different word. Does the angel know the difference? Yes. Because we go to chapter 10 and verse 12. Then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, and behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. So the word day there is day. 24 hours. So the angel knows the difference between the words. And what he was saying was 2,300 sacrifices. That's what he was saying. The word here is the same as in verse 26. It means evenings and mornings. And why is that? Why was that the word that was chosen? Because the question was, how long would the sacrifices be taken away? And what was it? It was the daily sacrifice, which was the morning and the evening sacrifices. There was two a day. If you remember, we went through all that back when we did the sermon on the hour of prayer. So there were two sacrifices a day. So he isn't talking about 2,300 days, but 2,300 sacrifices, daily sacrifices, 1,150 morning sacrifices, and 1,150 evening sacrifices, which is just over 3 years. And that's what we was reading in a couple accounts that said it was the 145th year when the abomination of desolation was set up, and then the 148th year at the same time when the sanctuary was cleansed. So that's just over 1150 is just over 3 years. Well, if you take into account that in certain three-year periods, you can have 2 years with a 13th month, as we will have in the year 2013 and in 2015. In a three-year period, 13, 14, 15, we're going to have twice, they're going to add a 13th month. So, all you got to do is look at your holiday calendar. In 2014 and in 2016, Passover is going to be late, and the feast is going to be late because they're adding the extra month. So if you figure that in, and then you figure the time that it was going to be where the one reference we read said it was the 15th day, and then you look at it and you're really close. And then you ask the question, when is the sanctuary cleansed? What was necessary to cleanse the sanctuary? Now, if you ask the average person on the street, they're going to say, well, based on what we read, you see, they got to pull up all the scrubs and all the shrubs that were growing there and pull out all the weeds, and they got to, clean everything up because the doors were burnt and the gates were burnt and this was that. That's not what they're talking about by cleansing the sanctuary. The cleansing of the sanctuary had to do with one thing: sacrifices. And we learned that back in Hebrews chapter 10, no, chapter 9. Hebrews chapter 9, a couple of verses, just so you got the reference of what we're talking about. And verse 19 says, "For when Moses had spoken every precept to all the people according to the law, he took the blood of calves and goats with water, scarlet wool, and hyssop, and sprinkled both the book itself and all the people, saying, 'This is the blood of the covenant which God has commanded you.' Then likewise he sprinkled with blood both the tabernacle and all the vessels of the ministry." Remember, they had to bring in all new vessels, pouring vessels, the table of showbread, the candlesticks. Everything had to be brought in new. So everything had to be sprinkled in order to be cleansed. That was part of the ceremonies that had to be done. "And according to the law, almost all things are purified, are cleansed with blood, and without the shedding of blood there is no remission. Therefore, it was necessary that the copies of the things in the heavens should be purified or cleansed with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these." So what were they telling us? That the temple had to be cleansed and purified after it was built originally with blood. Well, in order to have God's altar built again and all the new vessels and everything brought in, all that had to be cleansed, and the only way to cleanse it was with blood. They had to offer sacrifices. So, again, it says, "For Christ has not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us." So, the earthly tabernacles had to be cleansed and purified with blood. What we don't know is how much. How many sacrifices did it take before God said, "Okay, now it's clean"? Because they celebrated for 8 days the Festival of Lights. Do they call that Hanukkah? So, for 8 days they sacrificed. So, if you add all that time up, it's so close. And then you put it together with what he said, that would be in the latter time of their kingdom that this would take place. He's talking about history. It was still prophecy for Daniel, but it's history for us. The prophecy of the sacrifices being taken away and the abomination of desolation set up already happened twice. It happened under Antiochus Epiphanes, and it happened again in 70 AD when Titus came in and sacked Jerusalem. It's very possible that this part of the prophecy has been fulfilled and may not be repeated. In 70 AD, The temple wasn't cleansed. In fact, you can read in Josephus where Titus and his army made a point. They didn't even want to burn the temple. The fire started by accident when the soldiers got out of hand. He couldn't control his own soldiers, and they started the fire. And then it got out of, because of all the tumult, it burned to the ground. And when it burned, they just decided to raise the whole thing, and they leveled everything. And for their own reasons, Josephus writes, they left the Western Wall. What's the wall that's there today? The Western Wall, which everybody calls the Wailing Wall. You see it on the news all the time. The Jews are there praying. That's their only holy part that's left of the whole temple site. But what did Jesus say when the end time prophecy would be fulfilled? Not one stone would be left upon another. So this prophecy is yet to be fulfilled again in the future. So other parts of the prophecy have been fulfilled. Some haven't. Some will be fulfilled more than once. So have you ever tried to put a triangle in a square? You know, it just doesn't fit, does it? You turn it this way and that way, and you just wrestle with it. It doesn't fit. Well, let's take a look again at what he said here. He said, how long the sacrifices will be taken away and the sanctuary trampled underfoot. The language is the same. Certain things are the same language all the way throughout. What's he going to do? He's going to exalt himself above everything that is called God. When the sanctuary is going to be what? Trampled underfoot. So he says, how long is it going to be? Well, we either have 2,300 or 1,150 days. Okay? Those are the two choices that you get. Now, what are the facts that we know about the end time prophecy? Daniel chapter 12. Daniel chapter 12 tells us, and we know we're talking about the end time here because in verse 1, he says, at that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time, which we know is the great tribulation. That's the same as Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. So, Daniel chapter 12 and verse 11, he says, and from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Not 2,300, not 1,150, 1,290 days. That's why you got different numbers. You can't get a triangle into a square and vice versa, because we're talking about two different prophecies. One is in history and it's happened, and the other one is in the future yet to happen. So, let's take a look at what Jesus said in Luke 21. In Luke 21, Jesus tells us in verse 20, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Well, they saw that in 70 AD. And it happened. But it will be repeated. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart. And let not those who are in the country enter her. What is he saying? When you see it, run for your life. It isn't the time to go visit Jerusalem. It isn't the time to go visit the Holy Land and, you know, walk the streets. He says, that's the time to run for your life because that's it. He says, for these are the days of vengeance that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days, for there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So what is that same terminology that we read? Trampled underfoot. So, When is the times of the Gentiles, when Jerusalem is going to be trampled underfoot? And how long does it last? Revelation, chapter 11. Revelation chapter 11 and verse 1. It says, "Then I was given a reed like a measuring rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the altar of God, the temple of God, the altar and those who worship there." But as Bullinger points out, it's measured for destruction. And he quotes back in Lamentations. Verse 2, "But leave out the court which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles, and they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. When is the times of the Gentiles? How long does it last? 42 months. What are they doing for 42 months? Trampling the holy city underfoot. Same language all the way through. So we know what we're talking about when we read this. So, at the end, when the beast rules and all things written are fulfilled, we have a different set of numbers for the final fulfillment. So, we don't need to be focused on 2300 days from chapter 8. It's in history. It's past. If God wants to somehow work that in another fulfillment, He can, but I don't think it's anything we need to focus on, because he's given us all this other information about the end time fulfillment. And Antiochus Epiphanes and everything that he did in chapter 8 was a type to let us know, to give us an idea of what to expect from the end time beast. How he's going to go into Jerusalem, he's going to set up an abomination of desolation, he's going to destroy the sanctuary and the temple. All those things are going to be repeated. So, Matthew 24. We go to Matthew 24 and in verse 15. Matthew 24 and verse 15, he says, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place," and he adds, "whosoever reads, let him understand." And it's been remarked that what he meant by that was, "whosoever reads Daniel, let him understand." When you see the abomination of desolation, again, it's the one of the words you've got to look up. The word "see" doesn't mean "see." As, look, do you see the bird flying? Doesn't mean that. It means when you come to know, to realize, to recognize, and understand what is the abomination of desolation. When you see something in the holy place where it shouldn't be, understand and know, recognize it for what it is. It's the abomination of desolation. And I believe what he's referring to is the beast himself. We go again to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 3. He says, "Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come, the day of Christ and his returning and us gathering together unto him." He says, "That day will not come unless the falling away come first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who what? Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God." Isn't that what we read about? Antiochus Epiphanes was the type. "So that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." So what Christ is telling us, when you see this person in the temple proclaiming this, understand he's the abomination of desolation that Daniel was talking about. Don't wait for something else to happen. Know it. Understand it for what it is. And as he said in Luke run for your life. If you're in Judea, if you're in Jerusalem. Because it's going to be a repeat of history of what Antiochus Epiphanes did. He's going to take over. He's going to start destroying. We just read he's going to take all these people captive. He's going to take sword against the people. And there's going to be great wrath upon this people. So he's going to do exactly what the type did. So we have in history the type to look for the future. So then in summary, in Daniel chapter 7, he tells us about these kingdoms that are going to rule. And then he comes to a little horn. Daniel chapter 7. And verse 8, he says, I was considering the horns, and there came a little horn coming up among them. And he goes on to say in verse 11, I watched because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. And I watched till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. Now what did we read in Revelation? That's exactly what happened. He makes war against Christ, and Christ takes him and the kings of the earth, and the beast and the false prophet thrown into the lake of fire. And so he's trying to understand what this is. And in that verse 19 is, I wish to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from the others. And verse 20, the ten horns that were on his head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely that horn that had the eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, that was appearing greater than his fellows. And I watched, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailed against them. So this horn is the end time beast. And we get into Revelation, or in Daniel chapter 8, he starts talking about a little horn. And this little horn is the type of the end time beast. So he gives us a historical type to look at, to examine. Because he gave the prophecy in chapter 7 first. And so we don't have to guess so much as to what it's about. He gives a prophecy in chapter 8. And he uses the example of Antiochus Epiphanes and all the things he's going to do. And then we get to chapter 12, and he tells them how things are going to be repeated. Because again, there's going to be an abomination of desolation. Sacrifices are going to be taken away. So he gives us chapter 8 as an example in history to help us to understand what is going on. So again, in chapter 7, we have the little horn that comes up among the ten horns. And this is the beast of the end time that is just ahead of us. And it's just a question of how far ahead, depending on the way things go. God speeds things up and then he slows things down. But the way things are moving right now, it doesn't look like it's too far off. And then in chapter 8, we have the little horn, which was the beast in the past as a type of the coming end time beast. In Daniel chapter 11, we have the prophecy of the former beast, Antiochus Epiphanes, and all that he did. And at the end of chapter 11, Antiochus Epiphanes blends right in with the end time beast. So if we look at chapter 11, where we were before, where it says he's going to, again in verse 36, he's going to do according to his own will, he's going to exalt himself above every god, speak blasphemies, and he's going to do all this stuff, honor a god of fortresses, and the things, remember he told them they had to tear down the altars, they had to put up the idols and sacrifice to him every day. And then it goes right into, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. So, if you don't know what happened in history, you think you're reading history, and all of a sudden it says at the time of the end. And that's to help us to understand how similar the transition is. How similar that the coming beast is going to be like the former beast. Because the way it's written, Daniel couldn't tell the difference. He's just going along the prophecy, and all of a sudden he's at the time of the end. And he's describing the same thing. The king of the north against the king of the south. Antiochus Epiphanes was the king of the north. Ptolemy was the king of the south. And they were fighting back and forth. Daniel didn't see a difference. But we're told what happens because we get down to the end of chapter 11. There really is no chapter break. Chapter 12 just extends right into the end time, the great tribulation, and all the rest. So, all of this history is given to us to help us to understand the end time prophecies. All parts of the prophecies don't need to be repeated. A prophecy is given. Whether this part happened once or three times, it's still fulfilled. So if only one part is fulfilled once, that prophecy has been fulfilled, that part of it. So when we get down to the end time, this place in history where all things written will be fulfilled, then every part of these prophecies that haven't been fulfilled yet will be fulfilled. And some that have been fulfilled, if it is part of it, it'll be fulfilled again. And like I say, we know from history and from Maccabees and from Josephus and from other parts of history that the abomination of desolation and the sacrifice is ceasing has already happened twice. And there haven't been sacrifices since 70 AD because there hasn't been a temple. And yet we're looking for some sort of structure to be built because it says about the man of sin at the end time will sit in the temple of God saying that he is God. Well, you can't sit in something that isn't there. So something has to be erected. For 40 years in the wilderness and thereafter, what did they have? A tent. It was a tabernacle. But it was a temple because the altar was there. All the sacrifices were done in the tent. You know, it was all right there. It was all part of the structure. The Holy of Holies was in the tent, in the tabernacle. When they moved, what did they do? They packed it all down, loaded it up, and away they went. And the Ark of the Covenant was constructed with what? With holes on the ends, with the poles that could go through it, so the priest would carry it. Why? Because it was representative of the throne of God. When you get to Ezekiel, what do you see? You see a wheel inside of a wheel. Well, what is a pole inside of a hole? It's a wheel inside of a wheel. And the angels are carrying about the throne of God. And that's the example where the priest carried the Ark of the Covenant, which was the throne of God. Why was Uzzah struck dead? Because he touched it? Because they forgot how it was supposed to be transported. It wasn't supposed to be transported on a cart with an ox pulling it. It was supposed to be transported with the priest carrying it with the poles. Because that's how the true is transported, and that was a copy of the true. So all these things were done for a reason, and God told them these things are for a reason. And they forget. So these things that we read, history is there to tell us what happened in the past so we can understand what's coming up in the future, have a better idea of what to expect. So we know when some guy is in the temple, some guy is getting close, some guy is doing all these things, before he ever gets to the temple, we're going to know who he is by the things that he's doing. And we'll be well aware of it well ahead of time. We won't have to wait for him to get to Jerusalem, to go into the temple, and become the abomination of desolation. We'll know that way ahead of time by the things that he does, because we'll be able to see, look, Antiochus Epiphanes did this, and he's doing the same thing. And if the time is right, which it is, that's what it will be. And you'll recognize it. And when you see these things come together, you're going to see all these other prophecies, and you're going to recognize them, you're going to understand them for what they are, because all these things are going to come together and they're going to be made so clear, because when you understand one thing, it helps you to understand something else. And that's one of the reasons for prophecy, is to help us to understand the past so we can see the future and know that when it happens, God is in control. And nothing happening without His consent. And you don't have nothing to worry about. It's all in the book. All you got to do is hold fast.